Welcome to Curmudgeon's... Yeah, exactly.
Curmudgeon's blah, blah, blah.
I know, I'm just... Welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner.
We're not feeling very well. But this... But, okay. Go ahead.
Let me finish.
It's
Curmudgeon's Corner for Thursday, November 5th, 2015, just after 3 UTC. I'm Sam Minter. Yvonne Bo is here. And as Yvonne was about to say...
Yeah, we're not feeling too well. We don't know why. You know, we're 2,500 miles across instead of, like, you know, the same time zone.
I'm sure it's contagious. And I realized after the fact, you'd mentioned last week, we're in the same time zone. I don't think that's ever happened before. Of course, it had happened once before.
Well, it had happened when we were physically in the same place.
Yes.
But I don't think both of us were not on the same on West Coast time during the...
No,
the,
we've not been both on West Coast time before.
No. That was definitely a first.
So we should try to see over the course of the years how many other time zones we can both be in at the same time.
Oh, man. You know, I have been like lately, you know, lately I've just been on the road all the time. It's really annoying.
Okay. Before you bitch more about that, I just want to get the agenda out. Because I realize when we yammer for like 15 minutes about random stuff and then give the agenda, the people who aren't interested in the yammering but only the agenda, they've already shut off the podcast.
All right. So let's talk about the agenda.
We're going to talk about elections. So we will talk about election 2016 and developments there. But also, we just had an election this week, an off-year election, but there's still some interesting things to talk about. So in addition to election 2016, we will actually spend a segment talking about election 2015 and see what we have there. And our third main topic, and we may shuffle up the order of these three, is the plane crash in Sinai and the implications potentially thereof. And then we'll do a lightning round with a whole bunch of other stuff I have on all kinds of different things and a couple things Yvonne brought up. But in the meantime, Yvonne,
yeah,
you're getting tired of travel. I thought you loved travel.
Oh, you know, I'm getting old. You know, and it's just, I don't know. I'm just, when we first started recording the show years ago, I was on the road all the time and I was used to it. Okay, all right. And then I stopped, and now I've been having to be on the road now quite a lot, as a lot of you may have noticed, or I've been recording the show from a lot of different places. I'm really getting really sick of this.
You're in Atlanta this week, I believe.
I am in Atlanta this week, and I will be in Atlanta again next week, by the way. Mm. Which is just really fucking annoying as all hell. And you know, now we did like this time I was here in a meeting, and so we had some team building events. Okay.
Oh, those are always wonderful.
Well, here's the thing. Well, number one, yesterday's team building event, my team with my peers, we wound up in first place. We actually got some cool company branded cameras. Okay, all right. My company also makes cameras. And so I got a very nice, actually, it's even waterproof, this camera, too, and everything. So it's, I got a nice,
I got a nice camera.
And today they had another contest where they had some other cameras and some other prizes as well. We came in second place. Okay. So they had another camera as a prize. So it may have been like annoying to get two cameras. This time I got a very nice pen, I guess.
A pen.
But I've noticed that lately, like in these competitions, like, you know, if I'm on the teams, it's like usually we're either winning or we're, you know, almost winning. So I'm a little bit hyper competitive.
My own personal take on team building exercises is, oh my God, can I pretend to be dead now?
No. I go all out to win.
I hate them. I do whatever it can to be over with it as soon as possible. And if I can sneak out the door and not do it at all, well, all the better.
No. I go all out to win. Plus, yesterday we had this thing where we were building. We got basically a thing of like 5,000 Lego pieces. And we were supposed to go and build what we thought was the city of the future. Okay.
Okay. Yes.
And I will tell you that our city came out looking pretty damn good. I'm going to send you a picture. I'm going to post a picture of what we built.
Okay.
You know, we really, in that part, overwhelmingly crushed everybody else. Okay. In that department. Okay.
That sounds exciting.
And we were supposed to do a sales pitch to it, which I gave the sales pitch, and apparently my sales pitch worked because we got voted into first place. So did that. Today was more a trivia question thing. And we came in second place, honestly, because I messed up. The last question, which made us win, instead of being into a tie and go into a tiebreaker that took forever, we kept going tie after tie after tie, was a question about Mount Rushmore. Okay? And the question about Mount Rushmore was, how much money would you have? In this is where the kicker and the confusion began, because apparently they said in paper instead of just money. If you had, you know, how much money would you have? You had currency that was for the faces, you know, for the presidents that are on Mount Rushmore.
Oh, okay, right.
Okay. Okay. So you have to figure out first who the hell's in Mount Rushmore and what denominations of currency they have and so forth and whatever. Right. Okay. So there's Lincoln, there's Washington, and there is Jefferson.
And okay, Roosevelt. Right?
Yep. And Roosevelt. But Roosevelt, that is there
not
is
on
no
any money. Yes.
Not on any money. Okay. So then you've got those three. Now the thing is, so
you
that
did
would
coins.
Be we did the $8, and then we were wondering, wait, do they want the coins as well?
Mm-hmm.
So we added the coins to it.
Just to be clear, Lincoln is on the...
On the penny.
No, on the bills. Lincoln's on the five.
On the five, but he's on the penny as well.
Jefferson is on the two, and
right.
Washington is on,
it's on the one.
Okay,
right.
There you go, yes.
But then you've got on the coins, you got Washington's on the quarter.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, on some quarters.
Well, on some quarters, but he's on the... Well, but you did on a quarter, on the penny... And who the heck on the right? So we had 26
is
cents.
He, is he on all the quarters still? Which side
yeah,
did they flip?
I thought he is on all the quarters
back.
On the other
they
side.
The
on the other side, they put the states.
Okay. Or well,
right.
The states was a long time ago. They've been doing.
Yeah. But yeah. He's on all the quarters. So anyway, so you got 25. So we added that. We screwed up because he said only paper currency. And we were debating that shit. Should we ask the question? And I stupidly went and said. Yeah. He said how much money. So we wound up at a tie instead of winning outright. Then we wound up at this tiebreaker going over and over on a whole bunch of questions that, oh, my God. Like, I wound up, like, whiffing. I can't believe. Like McAfee, okay? McAfee technology.
Yeah.
What was the first name of the guy on McAfee? McAfee. Yeah, I said Fred. I don't know why. Okay?
Uh-huh.
I mean, I whiffed a couple like that. I'm like, going for the love of God, Ivan, what the hell? And I told you I wasn't feeling well. I got up in a moment that was like, I got a little bit. So I wasn't doing – well, finally at the end, you know, the other team won. We came in second place. So – but anyway, I'm like, you know, honestly, we didn't have fun, you know. So,
well, there you go. Okay.
Yeah. So anyway, I got a pen.
Okay. Exciting. I will tell you one story from my side of the fence before we wrap up this intro segment and get into the real stuff. Just a few minutes before we did the show, actually, I got, well, maybe half an hour. I got a call from my daughter.
Mm-hmm.
She had just gotten out of work and she'd locked her keys in the car. So she needed to be rescued.
Fun.
Because I guess when she got to work, she was like running late. She was flustered, whatever. She left the keys in the car. And so she needed us to get like we didn't actually, for whatever reason, we didn't have a spare key, but we had a spare whatever you call those dongle things that you key fob.
Yeah, the key fob, which you need, basically.
So anyway, the point is I went and rescued her. No problem. Her work's not far from home. But it reminded me of a specific incident from college. And you knew me then, but I don't know if you, I know you were not with me at the moment this happened, but I'm pretty sure you've heard this story before.
Mm-hmm.
So I stopped at a gas station near our college to get gas. And I was,
and you locked the car inside with the car running.
No, not quite.
No, not quite.
No, I locked the keys in the car while I was pumping gas.
While you were pumping gas.
So
yes.
The car was blocking the gas station, right?
Right.
It was a small gas station with only two aisles. So it was blocking one of the two aisles at this
gas
station.
I'm sure they were not happy.
So, you know, and I'm like, I finish pumping my gas. I go back in to get into the car. The door's locked. I'm like, oh, shit. right? What the hell do I do? And, you know, I'm 19, 20 years old, whatever. And so I'm a clueless little college kid. And so I find the gas station attendant and I'm like, look, I'm sorry, I'm blocking your thing. I don't know if you can help me push the car out of the way or whether you could, it was before I had my first cell phone. So it was, or can I use your phone to call AAA and I'll try to get somebody to pop the key and let me back in. And I'm sorry, you can see the keys right in there on the seat, or it's whatever. And the gas station attendant reaches his hand through the open window and unlocks the car. Yes, exactly.
I don't remember this one. Maybe you avoided telling me this one on purpose. Yeah, exactly. Well, that's not one of your finer moments.
Yeah, at least my daughter's windows were actually closed.
That's very good. That's very, very... okay. All right.
Well, on that note...
let's take a break.
Yeah, we'll take a break. We'll be back.
Let's show how we could be a little bit smarter than that.
Oh, I don't know. I was very intelligent. The door was locked. The keys were in the car.
Uh-huh.
And you're... Yeah, anyway.
Yeah.
How was I to know the window was open?
Oh, man. Anyway.
We'll be back after this.
Yes.
Hey, we know when you listen to this show, you have thoughts about what we say. You probably want to vent about what we got wrong or what we left out, right? Or maybe you want to suggest some future topics we just haven't gotten to yet. Well then, tell us all about it. Right now, there are four ways to get feedback to us. First, you can go to the Curmudgeon's Corner Facebook page and leave comments on the post where we announce all the new episodes. Second, you could go to curmudgeonscorner.com, that's with a hyphen, and leave a comment there instead. Third, both Yvonne and I are on Twitter. You can talk to me at Abulsme, A-B-U-L-S-M-E, or Yvonne at I-M-B-O, I-M-B-O-U. Finally, if you don't want to make your comments in a public forum like that, just email me directly at abulsme@abulsme.com. Again, that's A-B-U-L-S-M-E. But, you know, if you don't want us to mention your feedback on the show, be sure to say so, because otherwise we're probably going to respond to your comments on a future show. Because, you know, that's what makes the discussion. Thanks, and we look forward to hearing from you.
Okay, we are back, and we're going to start with election 2016. Now, last week, we recorded a little bit before the Republican debates. I put out the show after the Republican debates, and I don't know if you listened, Yvonne. I added a couple minutes with my thoughts on the debates.
I did not, and I unfortunately, because of my stupidly ridiculous schedule, which I've been lately, I mean, let's put it to you this way.
You went
I
was to some lame-ass concert instead of watching the debate.
I went to, I was at a conference, and I got invited to the closing event, which happened to be a concert, yes, which you considered lame. I did not think that Elton John playing live in the middle of San Francisco Bay was lame. No. Okay. All right. You know.
Yeah, whatever. You could have been watching Republicans.
Yeah. Yeah. I could have been watching Republicans basically act like jackasses, you know, for a couple of hours. Yeah. I mean, I guess, you know, so here's the new deal, apparently, with the Republicans, right? Because
Before we do that, I want to just do a sanity check on my predictions right after. Now, I said once all the polls wash through and all are post-debate, which hasn't quite happened yet, but I said the first prediction I made was when all is settled after the polls change here, the only candidates over 5% are going to be Trump, Carson, Rubio, and Cruz. And then later on, though, I let myself be convinced that Fiorina had actually done well enough that maybe she could maintain her slightly over 5% level. But I thought for sure Bush was going to drop below 5%. So far, Fiorina dropped more. So she had been holding steady. She's dropped since the debate. She's down below 5% now. And Bush, while he has gone down a little bit,
is still above
5%. So we have Carson, Trump, Rubio, Cruz, and Bush still over 5%. Now, what was the date of that debate?
I don't know. It was last Wednesday, whatever the hell it was.
Last Wednesday. So that was October 28th. And so only two out of the five polls in the Rear Clear Politics average were 100% after the debate. So we still haven't fully washed out the effects of the debate here. My predictions were okay, but not quite right yet. But time will tell. I don't think Fiorina is going to pop back above 5%, but I still think Bush is going to drop below 5%.
I think she's done. I think Fiorina's done.
I should have stuck with my original instincts and not modified them. By the time this all washes out, we have Carson, Trump, Rubio, and Cruz as the serious candidates remaining with any percentages worth talking about.
Yep. So about the debate. All right. I don't know what this is. I guess this is the new form of the Republicans, which they're all in their wackiness and stuff. But if you remember, Fox debate happened, right? Okay. Uh-huh. And they went to war with Fox over the handling of the debate.
Yes.
They were at war with the questions, the gotchas, and the blah, 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 and this whole thing. And they said they weren't going to appear on Fox. And they got into it with Roger Ailes, blah, 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 blah. You know, did that whole thing.
Well, and that in that case, it was mainly Trump getting into the fight.
Yeah, mainly Trump. Okay, all right, mainly Trump. This debate, they all went and they all decided that, you know, they hated everybody. You all suck. They just got into it
they got into a major whining fit about the format of the debate. And now, look, there are a couple things. There certainly were problems with the debate and the moderation, but I actually, the two places in the debate I faulted most were places where the moderators asked a very pointed question and then backed off when they should have kept going. Those two places were when I forget the name of the reporter, asked Trump about something on his website that was
Becky. Becky asked him about the website.
About Zuckerberg.
About specifically the comments that he denied, that he said, and apparently for whatever reason she didn't have specifically where they pulled that from, which was totally true. Trump denied it, and instead of like just getting into a pissing match with Trump, she decided to back off.
Not only back off, she apologized for the question.
Yeah. Yeah, she apologized for the question.
It was a perfectly legitimate question. And, you know,
and Trump, it was correct.
And Trump may have been technically right. He said he never said it. His website said it. He's probably never read his damn website. Some intern wrote it.
Good point.
You know? But nevertheless, it's out there under his name. And if she'd said that, then they could have had a debate. And the other is when they were pushing Carson on his involvement with some sleazy, shady
company.
Some shady company that sells like dietary supplements or some nonsense. Yeah,
some bullshit. Right.
Something that doesn't work.
Right. That don't do shit. He said,
"I have
my picture over there. I have nothing to do with them," which is all bullshit. It was all lies.
Yes, and they didn't push on that either. So the places I fault the moderation are places they could have been more aggressive than they were. And also, it is a legitimate point that the time management was just all whacked.
They had no experience in doing a debate. I mean, and you know, unlike the CNN debate, which who's the moderator of that debate again?
Anderson Cooper.
Anderson, he did a freaking job of keeping everybody in check. I mean, I got to give CNN kudos for keeping those bozos in check at that debate. Okay. But I mean, neither Becky nor Carl nor John Hardwood had ever done something like that with a herd of cats like that. And honestly, they... you know, it showed, and they didn't handle it well.
And you had craziness like, you know, Fiorina had, I forget exactly the time, but she was in the, like, the top two or three in terms of how much time she got to speak. You know, Bush got was in the bottom two or three. And it was just all scrambled. Like, you'd expect either that it's all pretty even, or roughly speaking, the ones that are most popular get more time. Neither of those things happened. It was just seemingly almost random in terms of how much time people got, which was a little bit weird. But the bottom line, though, is, you know, these guys all go and start complaining about it and, you know, oh, it was not fair and they were out to get us and blah, 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 blah.
I know, it's a bunch of whining.
And then they had this little summit where they, first of all, they canceled the debate it was supposed to be right. NBC in February.
They didn't cancel it. They said that they put it on hold or something.
Right, whatever. Yeah.
Whatever, right.
Anyway, and then they had this little summit with a bunch of the candidates, but not all of them. To right. discuss creating a new set of demands for the future debates.
Right.
And there were all sorts of talk about what they would demand and, you know, should all the moderators be Republican? You know, I don't even know what all...
I find ridiculous.
What all... I mean, there were people talking about a debate moderated by, like, Rush Limbaugh, you know, and those... Which, actually, I think would be really funny, to
be
honest.
That would be kind of funny, actually,
they had, Rush, Hannity, and some other guy that was being suggested. And I think that would actually be really funny. But I would want to see that debate, to be honest. But anyway, and then they couldn't actually even come to agreement. They were going to come out with some sort of unified letter of demands between the candidates or something like that to take to the RNC, who had negotiated all these debates in the first place. But they failed to come to a consensus on just about anything, and it kind of fell apart.
Right, and everybody just decided to go on their own way. Trump said he was going to negotiate on his own. I don't know. It's just a whole bunch of stuff. But, you know, this whole complaining about the debates goes back like a long time. I mean, you know... this has gotten worse this election cycle than ever, I think, because it's just this massive herd of cats that you have. Mm-hmm. But it's been going on for a while. I was still remembering who was the – I think it was Bernie Shaw like about 30 years ago He did that crazy question. I think it was – who the heck was it to Dukakis about, you know, about the death penalty if
– if your wife was raped or something.
If your wife was raped or something like that. You know, so it's like, you know, so there's always been a level of complaining about gotcha questions.
Oh, yeah.
And that kind of stuff for a long time. It's just that I don't think we've had this many different debates.
Here's the thing. Here's the thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Part of the job of the president is answering stupid questions from the press.
Yeah. True.
I mean, you know, for the most part, I think all of the stuff that happens in the campaign is, you know, exercising the wrong set of skills for candidates. And I think that's mostly true. I mean, you're not actually testing them on the things that they're going to need the most while they're in office. But one thing they will need in the office is answering hostile press questions from the press. And so, yeah, you should be able to deal with stupid ass questions from the press. And yes, the debates should be probing you on your weaknesses and the things that are, you know, no, they shouldn't be asking you questions about, hey, Donald Trump, can you tell us about how wonderful your business dealings have been?
Hey, Donald Trump, do you sweat less than Marco Rubio?
Uh-huh.
Well, I don't know. It's just he's been talking about this. He's been, like, going off now, like, railing against Marco Rubio is uglier than he is and sweats a lot, which is one of the things he's been saying the last week.
Whatever. Look, the debates are the debates. They certainly could be a lot better. I tweeted my suggestion that I make every election cycle, which is just put them all in a room and let them talk. And put, you know, put a camera on it. But of course, none of them would ever allow that. Every single one of the campaigns, when trying to negotiate these, is trying to make them as predictable as possible. So they can prepare, they can have their statement, and they can give their little thing. You know, if we're really going in that direction, just split the time evenly and let them all give a speech. You know?
Well... I don't know. I'm like, look, I I think that a good debate with good moderation is a good thing. If you let these guys you need somebody to push them and prod them in a certain direction. Otherwise, it's just degenerated to a freaking cat fight out there. I just.
So anyway, while we're talking Republicans, before we move on to Democrats, the other big news in the poll is, even in the polling averages, we'd had some hints before, but even in the polling averages, if you look at the national polls, we'd said this from Iowa, New Hampshire, blah, 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 but in the national polls, Carson is now ahead of Trump.
Carson! Carson! Carson!
Now, it earlier this morning, it looked better than it does now, because there was when a Quinnipiac poll came out and it looked like Carson was ahead by like 1.2%. Subsequently to that, there was another poll that came out by Fox that still shows Trump ahead. So now Carson is ahead by 0.2% over Trump.
But still, Trump is not in the lead. Carson!
So, and a number of articles pointed out Trump was in the lead for 107 days. From when he took the lead from Bush back in July to today, when Carson took the lead just barely.
All right. So the question is, who will lead? Who will be the next one to move into first place in the Republican scrum?
I think it'll be Trump again.
Nah.
Yep.
I think Trump's done.
You think he's done?
I think he's done. I really do.
I really do. I think it's way premature to say he's done.
I think he's done.
He's still within the range of poll values that he's bounced back and forth in since August.
But that's my point.
I know. Well, one of the things I said in the, well, but I could see him being flat rather than down is my point.
My point is that he's not going to lead again. That's what I'm saying. If somebody's going to, take the lead again, it's not going to be
Rubio?
Trump. I think he's got a good shot.
I think Carson will peak and go back down again while Trump is still flat, and Trump will be the next leader again.
Because
he doesn't end up eventually the leader.
I think that the reason why I just don't think that Trump will handle very well not being ahead.
Well, and you can tell already, like one of the things I tweeted this during or after last week's debate, Trump was clearly rattled. He was not on his game. He clearly he'd lost some of his mojo. Because it was already clear last week he wasn't ahead in all the polls. He was behind in Iowa. There'd already been one poll with him behind in the national. I think was there? Anyway, it was close. Carson was clearly gaining on him at the very least last week and was ahead in some states. And you could tell it affected him because his whole shtick, his whole thing was
I'm a winner.
I'm number one. And so what the hell does he do when he's not?
I'm number two. Look, I'm number two. What does that work?
But we've been wondering about, okay, well, what is the deal with Carson? And the thing is, I've been looking into this more, and the thing is, you can't base it on looking at his debate performance because
he's terrible.
He's so nothing in the debate. But what it is for a certain type of evangelical conservative, Carson has been around, he's been on the radio, he's been a comforting voice that they're familiar with, that agrees with them on all kinds of policy positions for years and years and years. He's written like 11 books that have been widely read in that community. So they look at it and they look at his list of issues and say, you know, they don't care about, you know, most people. And by they, I'm not singling out evangelical conservatives. Most of the general public does not dive deep into issues and positions and all that kind of stuff. They see he's anti-abortion. He's anti-taxes.
Right.
He's anti the elite.
Right.
You know, and you can rattle off, you know, probably five or six more issues like that, where it's not some in-depth, he's got this detailed position paper about what he wants to do. That's almost irrelevant. It's not like, well, what is his tax plan? Doesn't
well,
matter.
I heard
he doesn't
what
like
I,
taxes.
Listen, I was sitting beside somebody who told me that the reason why they were supporting Carson was basically, well, he's not the establishment.
Yes.
That was it. Because I asked him about his policies and stuff and whatever, blah, blah, blah. And he just told me, well, he's not the establishment.
Right.
That's it.
That's it. He's an out. And also, you know, he also refers to – there are all these sort of crazy conspiracy theories that he sort of alludes to but doesn't get into in depth that to the true believers are
all these
are,
people love eat those up. They
yeah,
love that
there's some of what they call silent dog whistles, which the true believers who are into that stuff hear that reference and immediately go, ah, he's one of us. He agrees with us. Meanwhile, for everybody else who isn't in that community and hasn't been inoculated into, you know, these crazy things, and I will use those words for most of them.
They are for the most part crazy.
It goes right over your head, or it goes right by, because you don't even recognize that it's something to pay attention to, because he's not talking to a mainstream issue that anybody's heard of. He just sort of makes this offhand statement that if you don't know what it is, you barely even notice, but if you do know what it is, you're like, ah, boom.
So basically you're telling me he's talking in code, and like for us, like, you know, morons that don't know his code.
Yes.
Okay. We just don't get it. Right. Okay.
Yes.
But to his followers, he's like, aha.
Basically. Yeah. And not necessarily just to his followers, but to, you know,
a certain
crowd of evangelical type conservatives, religious conservatives, you know, that are the kind who've listened to his talk show for years and years, and other similar talk show hosts. They know what this stuff is when they'll hear these call outs. And, you know, he's a nice, friendly, familiar voice that is on their side. So boom, there you go. And he's slowly building up. He's still clearly got a solid upward trend. And, you know, as we've said before many, many times, these polls are not predictive of what's going to actually happen once people start voting in February. But they tell us a lot about where things are now. But, you know, and the sort of elite opinion is still there's no fucking way in hell either Carson
are we
or Trump.
Are we the elite opinion still? Or we're not the elite?
We're
the cheap elite.
We pretend to be elite.
We pretend. I like that.
Yeah, there you go. But the conventional wisdom, let's say, is that Carson and Trump, there's no way in hell that either one of them can possibly be the nominee. They will fall apart at some point, and the real race here is between Rubio and Cruz.
It's just that even to me, like the people who believe the whole Cruz thing, I still don't see. Look, I mean. It's to me, this whole damn thing just seems like a replay of the last time.
And of course, well, speaking of replay of the last time, the replay of the last time would be Bush somehow makes a comeback. And he had a horrible, horrible, horrible performance.
He is doing horrific. I mean, it's just there's no other way of saying. I mean, the man is just his debate performance was just awful.
His debate performance was awful. The way he defended it was awful. And he's tried over the last week to say, I'm going to come back and I'm going to be more aggressive and blah, blah, blah. But he fails even at that.
Like, oh, my God.
There's a news story yesterday about how he apologized for his comment about the French work week to the French, because that's going to play well to the Republican base.
Oh, God, Jesus Christ. This is so retarded. I mean, look, I know that we had called out, like, you see, to me, I personally saw Rubio and Bush as very similar in terms of how they would appeal to the establishment, okay, all right, of the Republican Party, all right? the advantage that I gave Bush was the fact that shit, he had such a truckload of money.
Yeah.
I mean, that was really it. I mean, he really had the cash. But the reality is that this campaign has been terrible. It's been run like shit. I mean,
it's like, not only the way it's been run. I mean, it's him himself.
It's him. And, you know, I had seen Jeb in Florida a lot. OK, and you got to remember something. He lost his first campaign as governor. And even when he won in afterwards, his style with like the press and with everybody in communication, you know, I was, you know, having flashback and realizing, shit, you know what? He was like this a lot of times. And the problem was that he was so popular because he was the governor that I gave it very little scant attention. But the reality is that he was like this. He just was not very good in public at all. You know, he may have been good in like intimate settings that were not had no confrontation. OK, somebody just lobbing up friendly questions. OK, but when he was like up against competition, he just was not good at all. Or when he had like really hard questions in front of him. So I don't see how the hell he gets out of this hole. He just seems incapable of it. And every time he tries, the harder he tries, the worse he looks.
Well, and it's one of those things where, you know, I mean, we were talking about how Clinton kept doing herself damage by the way she was reacting to things in public.
But then she turned it around.
And she's kind of turned it around. So, I mean, if he somehow turns it around, maybe it's not quite too late, but it's damn close to too late.
It's getting close to that. And the problem is that, you know, Rubio, who a lot of people in the establishment see as a viable option, okay, have always seen him. I mean, he went and he freaking crushed him. I mean,
well, you got to remember that's in a long sequence of things. In the debate before, Trump crushed him a few times.
Right.
I mean, he's just whenever he gets into these, like, I mean, Rubio was absolutely right in his debate answer where he said, look, somebody told you this was a good idea and put you up to this.
Right.
And well, yeah, that was obviously true. You knew it wasn't like Bush on his own saying, you know, I honestly feel this thing about Rubio's Senate attendance record and I'm going to say it. No, it's some damn Bush advisor was like, right. You got to attack Rubio. Let's attack him on the Senate record. Use this line. It'll come off funny. You can attack the French at the same time and the Republicans will eat that up. And so he tries it. And of course, Rubio's completely prepared for him and shuts it down completely. And Bush has no comeback.
I know. He was just caught flat-footed completely. Looked like an idiot.
And I saw a few attempts online to say, here's what Bush should have said to come back to Rubio, some of which might have been actually fairly effective. But no, none of that happened. He was just...
No.
He was just
He stood there looking like an idiot.
Yeah. Because he knew Rubio was right.
I know.
Because he attacked him on a trivial issue that doesn't really matter and is true of every senator who's ever run for president.
Everybody who has run for president. That's absolutely right. Yes.
Yeah, and it's not just senators. I mean, the governors aren't exactly home doing their jobs.
No, you know? Not at all. No.
I mean, maybe a little bit more than the senators, but, you know, anyway. So, so far from the actual results, since the debate, Trump is down, Carson is up, Rubio is up, Cruz is up, Bush... Fiorina down. Anybody below that doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter.
Santorum's not going to make a surge.
I don't know.
He's still running, right?
Yep. Nobody else has dropped out since we last spoke.
Wow. Yeah. There you go. We still got Santorum. All right.
As long as you have Santorum, you're happy.
I guess so.
Yeah, he'll be the next one to lead.
Yeah.
Yeah. Forget about these other people. So wait, you said the next person to lead is not going to be Trump, as I predicted. I expect Carson will peak, go back down. Trump will take the lead again. You don't think that'll happen. But who do you think will take the lead from Carson? Is it Rubio?
I think if somebody takes the lead, like the next time around, it's going to be Rubio.
He's got a lot of ground to make up right now.
He's got a lot of ground to make up, but look at how quickly these numbers all of a sudden have piled in one direction or another. And look at Carson's surge. I mean, it's crazy. And this is how, I don't know what the hell, but remember, we had these surges like this in the last damn cycle too.
I mean, this election's a very different pattern, but yes, we had these up and downs because, you know, hey, it's the primaries. It's, you know, a long way out. People are still exploring their options, et cetera, et cetera. Also, another thing to point out is, you know, we're looking at these national polls. Of course, it doesn't work that way. But then when you do start looking at things like the Iowa caucuses, those are actually really, really hard to poll because they're relatively low turnout. I mean, the Iowa caucuses are famous, so they got a lot of people. Don't get me wrong. But it's a very unpredictable turnout because it's so involved. People have to show up in person and stay for a long time. It's not just a few minutes. There's a much more commitment to it, et cetera. It's hard to get good polls of those kinds of things, so there's a lot of volatility. And yeah, we're still months out.
We're still months out. So, you know, I'm going. You know, I just it's just depending on the rate at which Trump goes down. It's just that he's losing steam. And he's not a good guy acting at number two. And I just think that he's just not going to handle it well. That's all.
So he's on Saturday Night Live this weekend as the host. Is it going to help him or hurt him?
I don't think it's going to make any difference.
Yeah, you're probably right. But, you know, here's the thing. There's been this big movement trying to get NBC to dump him because he's a racist, whatever. Racism isn't funny is one of the slogans they're doing, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, okay, I get your guy's point. But come on, this is going to be funny.
It should be funny. It should be
this
hilarious.
Is going to be funny.
This has got to be
funny. Like, I don't watch Saturday Night Live on a regular basis.
I will definitely watch for Trump.
Yeah. And yeah, the ratings are going to be huge.
Yep.
You know?
But here's the funniest thing. So let's get this straight, right? So they are. So I did not realize he's going to be an SNL. So they are. They suspended going to the debate on NBC yet. And Trump was one of the guys who was the most vociferous about hating NBC and all this shit, right? And then he's going to be on SNL on NBC.
Not only on SNL, he's hosting SNL.
He's going to host SNL.
So he's going to be in most of the skits, not just like Hillary Clinton was on, but she was on for like a couple minutes in one skit. Trump is going to be on the whole thing. Like, so he's not just going to like, you know, play himself in a little skit or whatever. He's going to be like doing all kinds of things all throughout the whole show. Now, this has also brought a lot of people to say, you know, FCC is watching very carefully based on equal time rules, all this kind of crap, whether SNL becomes essentially a free advertisement for Trump that has to be matched in some way to other candidates.
Equal time, huh? So we can get
equal time rules don't really exist in their, you know, 1970s form anymore. But there is a issue of, are you essentially giving free airtime to a candidate?
So that we're going to have like Ben like Carson go. We're going to have Ben Carson go and like host Saturday Night Live. So that's going to be like the snooze fest that was like that Democratic debate. I mean, I might as well just like turn that on so I can fall asleep.
I don't think we need Ben Carson to host Saturday Night Live.
You don't think so? Okay. Well, all right. I guess
now, in one of the promos for Saturday Night Live that was posted on the web, Trump did say that Ben Carson is a loser.
Wait, what? Who said Ben Carson's a loser?
Trump. He recorded a bunch of promos for this weekend Saturday Night Live, and one of them, he's like, he just looks at the camera and says, "That Ben Carson guy, he's a loser."
Oh my God! Well, there you go.
Anyway, I think we're about done with the presidential race. I just want to mention Democrats continue as is. Clinton in the poll average is up to just under 55%. I thought she'd be higher by now, actually, but Sanders is actually, now that there are a few more polls in, picking up a little bit more of the Biden support, I guess, because he's also up to 33%. They're both up. O'Malley actually gained a little bit, like with Chafee and Webb and Biden.
O'Malley's
up to just under 2%.
Wow. 2%. All right. There you go. Woohoo.
Yes. Okay. Let's take a break. We'll be back. And why don't we stay in election mode? We'll finish the show up with the plane crash, but we'll stay in election mode. But we'll talk about this week's election.
Right.
And some of the results thereof. And people have been talking about a polling failure in Kentucky and other stuff like that. We'll be back with all that. Back after this. Okay, we are back.
Sam just described our first half of our show as whatever long it's going to be on a real podcast.
I said 51 megabytes of scintillating audio.
Yeah, I don't know, but I've never described our show as scintillating before. You know, how about tingling? Not tingling. Anyway, all right.
Anyway.
Okay. So.
And yeah. The size will be completely different by the time I finish editing it, but yes. Okay, whatever. So we had an election this week.
Yeah. Well, but you know, we've talked about this before. You know, these elections have very low turnout. I mean, nobody goes to the polls or this except the really true diehards. Okay. Mm-hmm. And that plays into the Republican advantage on most of these issues. I mean, you know, so Ohio is having this discussion over here. So a couple of people from Ohio, there was this bill to legalize marijuana in Ohio. Now, the bill was kind of like a little bit messed up in some sense, because apparently they were going to legalize marijuana and they were going to like give like some specific group basically a monopoly on the sale of marijuana in the state, mm-hmm. and which I found kind of strange.
It was a screwed up bill, so lots of people who are otherwise pro marijuana voted against it anyway.
Yeah, because it was just completely screwed up.
I've heard people describe the election results this time as, you know, there are a couple things. First of all, there was a lot of hand-wringing of, oh my God, the Democrats lost all kinds of stuff, and this shows all the reasons why the Democratic Party is doomed. First of all, there are some, you know, things to say about that, and we will in a second. But when you actually look at it, the Democrats tended to, the places they lost that were highly visible, like the Kentucky's governor race,
right,
were in the South. Where Democrats have been on the decline for decades anyway.
Yeah.
There was a little bit of a polling.
I was shocked to realize that in Kentucky that there was a Democratic governor. I thought it was a Republican.
And apparently it's been Democrats most of the time over the last 40 years. But, you know, it still was an anomaly and is not altogether shocking. The reason people are surprised about Kentucky specifically was there was a lot of polling showing it going the other way. And we'll talk about that in a minute. But if you look outside of the South, the Democrats had plenty of wins all over the country, too. So it's not that clear cut. But it does bring up a more general problem. And we've actually talked about this on the show before. It's not new with this election. And I shouldn't say problem, but it's something that's been structurally developing in this country over the last couple decades, which is that the Democrats are structured in such a way that they're highly competitive in the presidential elections, and in fact, arguably have the advantage in presidential elections. But yep. in everything else, the House, the Senate, governor's races, local legislatures, and even local county governments all over the country, the Republicans have been cleaning up.
Right.
And so we sort of have set up this bifurcation. And I would not be surprised. Now, it's by no means inevitable. Like, the Democrats don't have a lock on the presidency in 2016. Hillary is showing herself to be fairly weak against most Republicans here, or at least some of the Republicans, depending on who they nominate. So the Republicans could easily win the presidency. But the Democrats seem to have a structural advantage for the presidency and may be able to set up a situation where they retain the presidency for a long time. You know, maybe past the 8 years, 12 years, 16 years, who knows, while at the same time,
they can't get Congress.
They can't get Congress. They can't get state legislatures. They can't get governorships. Because all of those elections have different sorts of dynamics. And so you could see that happening. And the Republic, and part of this is sort of, what happens as a result of high-level strategies in the two parties going back quite a ways. The Republicans have made it a very, very conscious part of their strategy, starting in the Bill Clinton years, or maybe even a little bit before that, to really work at the local level and work on getting control of state legislatures and county governments and governorships and things like that. And so you get control of state legislatures, then you get control of the redistricting process. You get control of the redistricting process, you can tilt things a little bit in your favor. Also, you can just make a lot of things happen at the local level. So, for instance, one of the issues that people have talked about this being particularly effective is, of course, the abortion issue, where there have been state efforts to restrict the abortion all over the country that have been fairly effective and have not been overturned by the Supreme Court. And they've just been highly effective at these sort of local efforts. Meanwhile, the Democrats have not done very much locally at all, except in their sort of strongholds of major cities, and have concentrated nearly all their effort at the national level. And so these strategies, you've seen them playing out in sort of the and you get this weird division that leads to the kind of gridlock we've been talking about, where neither party can really implement all of their agenda. But
yeah, but they can. The reality is, listen. Even like, look, we may be exaggerating that a little bit. Look, 5 years ago, the when Obama was there, he had both House, Senate, and a presidency.
Yes.
And the reality is that because of the way politics are in the U.S. and even like how you build such a majority, you have a big chunk of you have a significant chunk in there that is still somewhere in the middle that is not completely to your agenda, that still makes it difficult for you to just ramrod any legislation that you
want.
Well,
and one of the things, and I wish I had the article in front of me. First of all, there's one article on this that I do have in front of me. Democrats are in denial. Their party is actually in deep trouble by Matthew Iglesias, that was actually published on October 19th, so a while ago now, that has a lot of this. But I've seen a few others that, unfortunately, I don't have in front of me. One is, you know, that, hey, how you interpret this depends on whether you think the fundamentals of American policy are sort of a rebellion against the party in power that always sort of happens. So you get sort of this cyclical, we have Republicans, then we have Democrats, then we have Republicans, then we have Democrats. Or whether you believe there's a cycle where the party that's in power can sort of consolidate their gains and set themselves up for a long-term win. In our lifetime, not, I shouldn't say our whole lifetime, but in recent decades, we've had that back and forth cycle on a fairly regular basis.
Yeah.
There were periods, sort of a generation before us, where, you know, the Democrats were in charge for, you know, starting with FDR for like 40 years or something like that.
Yeah.
Of the
House.
Well, I'm talking in of, yeah, of the House, but I'm talking sort of presidential plus House plus getting their agenda enacted. There were earlier in American history, it went back and forth between the parties, but like you would have the Democrats for not just two presidential cycles, but maybe four or five, and you'd have the Republicans for a while, and then whereas we've seemed to the last few, I mean.
Well,
George
really,
H.W. Bush
well,
is the last let's... time we've had three in a row.
Three in a row. Three. Well, yes, that's true.
Three presidencies
exactly.
in a row.
Right. Yes, that's the last time. But even before that, if you think about it, you had go back to Johnson. You had Johnson. Okay. Yet Kennedy and Johnson.
Yep.
Johnson didn't run. Then you had Nixon.
Yep.
You had Nixon. He had to leave under duress, Ford. Then you went to Carter for one term. Okay. Then we went back to Republicans. Then we had them for that was really the only time that we really had that length of a period. I mean, it was that Reagan, H.W. Bush, and even H.W. Bush on that term, he lost out after his first, he didn't get reelected.
Like I said, to get a longer stretch, you have to go back to FDR. And Truman, FDR and Truman.
Yeah.
Because FDR had three and a fraction terms. He didn't finish his fourth term.
Right.
And then you had Truman. So you had, 16 years there. You know, and it's been rare since then. Also, part of that, I did a chart shortly after the 2008 elections. Maybe it was 2012. Anyway, looking at popular vote results. And we've also been in a long stretch of very close competitive elections compared to historical norms. Like, you know, back, you know, mentioning FDR and some of the ones before him, Calvin, you know, going back early in the century, you had a lot of blowout elections where you'd had whoever won was at like 70%. Or maybe even 80, I believe, in a couple cases. I forget exactly, but they were unimaginable blowouts by today's standard in the popular vote.
And right now the differences are like 50 some odd points to 40 some odd points. I mean, you know, it's like,
I mean, the last
is five percentage points, you know.
Yeah. The last few elections have been decided by a couple percentage points.
Right. Right.
And, yeah. So, yeah. Anyway, we've got a different kind of era, but you do have this, at least in the last. There was another tweet I saw that was good that just showed how much just during Obama's term, how much has been lost for Democrats in terms of state legislatures, governors, all of these sorts of local races. And it's been a bloodbath for Democrats because the Republicans are very good at campaigning at those levels and consolidating their leads at that level. And we'll see. I tend to think we are in sort of the people react against what's there, you know, and we've mentioned the economy is a big part of it and blah, blah, blah. So, you know, I remember predicting a while ago that Hillary Clinton would win the next election, but she'd be a one-term president. Because by the end of 12 years, people would be sick of the Democrats and ready for the Republicans to have another shot.
Possible.
Anyway, so I did want to mention before we move on the Kentucky polling, because one of the things that has been a lot have been made out of is the polling in Kentucky and how it was showing a close race with the Democrats slightly ahead. And it ended up being a pretty damn solid win by the Republican. And there's been a lot of, if you look around at the sites that follow polls, which I, of course, do, there have been a lot of sort of analysis of, well, what exactly went wrong? Were they modeling the electorate right? And, you know, apparently in Kentucky, there's a really big difference between voter registration in terms of who says they're Republican and Democrat for voter registration versus party identification in the exit polls from the last election. And so there's a question of how they modeled who would turn out and blah, 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 and all these specifics. But I think that, you know, you don't need to get into that level of detail. The key is that is margins of error and the fact that they probably are underreporting margins of error when they report margins of error. These things, I saw one person going on about a study that said, you know, even though the margin of errors reported are theoretically 95% margins of error, so one time out of 20, the election should come in outside of the range that's predicted, they're really actually 75% margins of error. So one time in four, they're coming in outside of the range predicted if you actually look at results. And this is why, you know, when I do my own election analysis on electiongraphs.com, you know, anybody within 5%, I'm like, up for grabs. Who the hell knows? Too close to call.
And that's been the way that it's been, really.
Because there are a couple of factors there. One is that a 5% margin can disappear really, really quickly, depending on news. If something happens, you know, that margin can just disappear in 24, 48 hours easily. Another is that if there is an inherent bias in the polls, like they're all overestimating the number of Democrats who are going to show up or something, 5% is roughly the number that you expect that kind of error to go. Now, in this case, they were off by more than 5%. The polls were showing like the Democrat ahead maybe by 2 points, and the Republican actually won by almost 10. But you should have known that, you know, this was a race that could easily go either way. And not be too horribly shocked when the Republicans went. In the case of Kentucky itself, you've also got some other factors. It's really hard to predict polls and when there's low turnout.
That's what I was going to say. That's a big part of the problem.
You're not going to have that problem in the presidential election.
Exactly. What we've had in the presidential election has been that usually the polls are right, but what was happening is that the winner won by a much bigger margin than the polls had been forecasting.
That's the thing I've been pointing out. I forgot my third point. In Kentucky, there was another problem in that there was not actually all that much polling. And some of the polling was old, and they were all by sort of relatively small players, and none of the big, well-known guys polled the race at all. There's all kinds of factors there. But bottom line is, this doesn't mean, because a lot of people are trying to make the polls, make the point that, look, they got Kentucky so incredibly wrong. Why are we paying all this attention to the presidential polls? Why are we using the polls to winnow out the Republican field when we know they're wrong? Look at Kentucky. And I think that's overreading it, because you have to pay attention to what it is. Like I've said repeatedly, like the polls of the national election that I track on electiongraphs.com are not intended as a prediction of the actual election a year from now at all. It's too far out for that. But they tell you roughly where things are now. But you also have to have that big, wide margin of possibilities. And every time people are looking at polls and saying that this guy's at 27 and this guy's at 28, you can say those numbers, but you got to remember that's the middle of the ranges. I mean, even when we were talking a few minutes ago about the presidential race and Carson's up by 0.2% in the average, 0.2% is nothing. Carson and Trump are tied. Okay.
Yeah, agreed.
But Carson and Trump are very clearly ahead of Rubio and Cruz. They're far enough away from them that you can say that with confidence. But you got to be really careful when you're looking at these polls, because whenever people actually do sort of point at them as a single point number, you're misinterpreting it already. You have to sort of view them as that's the center of a probabilistic range, And it's not even they're within margin of error, blah, blah, blah. There are all kinds of ways you can interpret that. But the bottom line is, you know, it's not a point number. It's a range. And so, again, that's why on electiongraphs.com, for instance, I'm looking at Clinton versus Bush right now. And yes, I have a central line. The expected case is Clinton wins by 48 electoral votes in that particular matchup. But I show the range. Given the polling, it could easily go from anything from Clinton winning by 98 to Bush winning by 104. There's actually a pretty damn wide range given what the polling is right now. And anything within that range is reasonably possible given current polling. And that's even still saying, you know, if the election was held today, which you've got a whole damn year, so who the hell knows what happens in the next year? You know, so you got to interpret these things carefully. But the fact that a poll was wrong doesn't necessarily, well, and I even hesitate to say the poll was wrong. The poll was off by quite a bit, but it was still, given where the polls were, nobody should have been saying the Democrats got this.
Right.
So nobody should be shocked by the Republican winning. You can be a little bit shocked by the margin. But again, there are all kinds of reasons why it could have been that far off. You know, turnout, sparse polling. There was a third party candidate, Drew Curtis, the guy who started FARC.com, was running as a third party in that race. You know, you got all kinds of weirdness going on. But as long as you interpret it properly and are careful, you're set. And anything else? Anything else to say about the 2015 election? Were there any other interesting referenda or anything like that that happened?
Not that I can recall. Nope.
Okay, let's wrap this up. We will be back after this.
This is Sam here with an opportunity for you. Yes, you heard me right, an opportunity. For you loyal listeners of Curmudgeon's Corner, you know, every once in a while, Yvonne can't make a show. And I do a solo show. Which, you know, I think I do okay. But, you know, it's always interesting to have a second person to bounce off. And just in general, sometimes it's good to hear another voice. If you, yes, you, have some things to say about the kinds of things we usually talk about on Curmudgeon's Corner, you know, politics, current events, news, tech, then drop me a line at abelsmay@abelsmay.com letting me know. And, hey, I'll keep you in mind. And maybe ask if you can join us sometime, either on a regular show with Yvonne, if it's something particularly pressing that you maybe have an expertise on, or just, you know, hey, an opportunity to co-host when Yvonne is out. Who knows? Now, I am not guaranteeing that if you send me an email, you will definitely get on the show, but let me know if you're interested, and I'll keep you in mind. Thanks, and now, back to the show.
Okay, here we are. And before we talk about the plane, I just wanted to mention one other thing that came across Twitter while I was while we were on the break. There's a new biography of George H.W. Bush coming out next week. And apparently it has a lot of interesting things in it. One, him sort of slamming Rumsfeld and Cheney and saying they were sort of really responsible for most of the things in Bush Jr.'s administration, which, okay, whatever. You know, yes, I blame them a lot, but W was fundamentally charged.
His dad. I mean, give me a break.
Here's the other interesting thing that's relevant here. And by the way, this is a biography by John Meekham coming out next week. But apparently also in the book is a new little tidbit that may shed a little bit of light into why Trump doesn't like the Bushes very much.
Okay.
Donald Trump in 1988 lobbied George Bush to dump Quayle and make him the VP candidate in 1988. And George H.W. Bush turned him down.
Well, there you go.
Or sorry, not 88, 92.
88?
In 92.
Oh, in 92 for the second run.
For the second
run. Okay. Yeah. I see.
And so I just thought that was interesting.
Oh, that's interesting.
Okay. Anyway, moving on. We had a plane crash this week.
Yeah.
And Yvonne, you're our resident aviation expert. So why don't you tell us about what's known and not known so far?
Well, I mean, the simple thing is an A320 Airbus. For the most part, other than people like diving it for suicide and some other like goofy stuff that happened, like when the plane was new, it's a very reliable aircraft. Nothing happens. The plane was flying from an airport in the south of the Sinai in Egypt towards destination Russia. I think it was St. Petersburg, actually.
Yeah, it was from Sham el-Sheikh, which is a major resort town.
Resort town,
To St. Petersburg.
St. Petersburg. And the plane took off. No distress signal was called. And all of a sudden, boom. it's on the ground. And, you know, there a number of people started speculating that the airline company said that it doesn't appear to have been something mechanical, that it had to be something external. And then apparently,
although having said that, and I know the other theories are more prominent right now, but apparently there were some things on record where there had been complaints about certain maintenance issues on this plane that hadn't been properly followed up on, et cetera, et cetera.
Apparently. Yeah, but none of those issues would cause the kind of, like, you know, we were about a break. You know, look, whatever maintenance issues you got a plane that broke up just in the middle of the air into bits and pieces, you know, in like one shot with no distress signal, no nothing. And, you know, and nothing happening. You know,
and people were talking about, was it a missile from the ground again?
Right.
But nobody in that region has the missiles that would reach as high as it was when it broke apart.
Right.
And so
the speculation right now is that there must have been somebody must have gotten a bomb on the plane. I think that that's, you know, and a lot of people are saying that there's a British foreign secretary. Went and said we have concluded there is a significant possibility the crash is caused by an explosive device aboard the aircraft.
And an ISIS group has taken credit, although people have been reluctant to, you know, give that a lot of credence yet, absent more solid evidence.
Yeah, I think that it's probably highly likely that the plane was bombed. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know if it was bombed just because of Russians' retaliation to the fact that they've decided to engage on, they've basically declared war on ISIS, right? To defend, you know, their buddy Assad. I mean, it certainly, I mean, I guess I it doesn't stretch the imagination that they would have picked, you know, this location, which seemed like a good, convenient target, to take a flight to Russia to frickin' put a bomb on the plane and, like, you know, and take it down. I mean, don't you think? I'm speculating right now, because that's all we could do.
It's certainly within the realm of imagination. I mean, it would be a departure for what has been done recently. I mean, what ISIS has been doing in that region, including in the Sinai, because there were a bunch of sort of rebellish groups in the Sinai who declared their allegiance to ISIS like a year ago or something like that. But they've been very locally focused. They've been focused on controlling area on the ground. They have not been spending very much time at all looking at more globally focused attacks. Now, this is coming from their area, but, you know, it's an attack on Russia. And that's not something ISIS has been doing very much to date. Now, that doesn't mean they might not in the future, but that's actually one of the things that, you know, Al-Qaeda and ISIS differed strategy-wise on, is Al-Qaeda was all about the global war against the West, whereas ISIS was very much, screw the global war against the West. We want to consolidate control over an area.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, you know, so it would be a very different, like, type of retaliation for them to do this. I understand that. But at the same time, I mean, you know, look, I guess it was a pretty convenient target, if you think about it, for them to use, you know, to a certain extent.
Well, and so it brings up the questions, though. Let's say for the sake of argument, and you know, we probably won't, quote unquote, actually know for a while yet. But let's say for the sake of argument, ISIS did do this, and it was a direct attack on the Russians in retaliation for the Russians getting involved in Syria. Now, so far, the Russians actually haven't been concentrating very much on ISIS in Syria. Their focus is elsewhere, on the other anti-Assad rebels. And one of the big complaints the West has had, as you know, Russia's not really going after ISIS. They're just protecting Assad.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Assad, but to protect Assad, they also have to bomb ISIS as well. Well, I mean, they're bombing everybody.
But they've only bombing ISIS a very, very small amount compared to.
Oh, everybody. I understand.
Question is, if this is flat out proven, ISIS did this to get at Russia, does Russia's behavior actually change?
I don't know.
And start targeting ISIS more directly?
Who knows? I mean, I don't know. I mean, this whole thing by Russia is more a propaganda thing, a scheme than anything else. So I don't know. Putin will do whatever the hell is going to get him the best propaganda back home. That's what I think. And I'm not sure what the heck that is.
Yeah,
I mean, and, well, simple
and,
as that.
And let's be more specific. If it turns out this was definitely because of, you know, ISIS people in the Sinai, not ISIS people in Syria, not ISIS people in Iraq, what the hell? Does Russia bomb Egypt?
Oh, God. Who knows? Who the hell really knows?
I mean, I don't think so, but the Sinai is apparently not really under control of the Egyptian government right now anyway, at least significant portions of it. Once again, we're seeing, like, this whole region, the level of chaos, it's a mess, but it's increasing. It's getting worse. You know, any hope that may have been for sort of increased stability in the Middle East that some people might have been holding on to a few years ago. Yeah, screw that. That's not happening. It's going to get a lot worse before it gets better, I think.
Yeah. Well, anyway, so, I mean, that's all we know, like, really right now about this. I mean, look, I'm pretty certain that it was an act, okay, of some kind. It probably, given the fact that it's highly unlikely that anybody had the type of missile needed to bring down a plane like that in that area, that it probably was a bomb somehow smuggled on the plane. I don't see much of any other options. We'll just have to wait for the information to confirm it. But you know.
Now, do you have any idea, just for do you have any idea what security is like there and the Sinai compared
to security outside
here?
The U.S. is usually not as, you know, you got to remember that.
Because
right
we talk
most
about how useless
airports,
most of the American security is, but the one thing we do have is scanning for bombs.
That is correct. And that's one of the things that in a lot of places outside the U.S., you know, except for flights coming in from certain places, they just don't have that equipment. And that is not an airport that serves, you know, flights that come to the U.S. But if you go to almost every airport, you know, under TSA, you know, requirements for to come into the U.S., they have to screen for that. And, you know, you just can't, you know, dispatch a flight without that kind of screening. I mean, and that's, I think, the big difference. I mean, you know, you go to certain airports outside the U.S. and it feels like it's, you know, compared to security in the U.S., it feels like it's back to 1985, you know, in terms of that.
Mm.
So, yeah, I mean, I'm sure that probably the level of scrutiny and like security that was there is not the same level as we have over here. And the thing that I call, like, you know, the screening that I say is a lot like not as useful is the screening goes to the individuals, because look, the equipment they've got right now that they are putting to detect bombs on luggage that we're using is pretty damn good. All right. Look, you try to put, I mean, really, if they're a U.S. airport, you really try to put an explosive device, through check baggage, highly, you know, very unlikely that somebody will get something through there. However, when we're talking about, you know, what we're talking about is more screening individuals and what they have on them. Now, I'll say this. Look, the U.S. government is getting, you know, as we've said, they're getting smarter about this, like right now, especially with the screening. You know, they've got this pre-program right now that a lot of people signed up to get pre-screened. So therefore, you're only screening people that have not, you know, not been able to go through those checks. And even like right now, aside from that, they are already profiling travelers that they know that they believe are safe travelers. OK, that may not have registered for it. And they're auto selecting those to go into the pre-line without them actually having signed up. So they're already going and like filtering through, you know, who we've got, you know, what we know and say, OK, you know, these travelers, this is probably good. These we probably should do some double checking just to make sure, you know, whatever. So, you know, they're applying that intelligence, which before they weren't. So, you know, it does make a difference, you know, that the fact that they're doing that right now. So, you know, is it perfect? No, but it's certainly a lot better than what they implemented post 2001 right afterwards. That's for sure. Okay. So
last question. How long do you think before we'll have like a better notion of this. Is this one of these things where we're not going to hear it?
It'll be pretty soon. It'll be pretty soon. And, you know, they already got both recorders. So once they find, you know, from the recorders what happened, that, you know, that basically, you know, if the flight just stopped in the middle, they'll know it's a device that exploded.
Well, and they're already obviously going to be screening the passenger list. They're going to be screening employees at the airport that it came from.
And they'll be looking at the wreckage and, like, you know, what's there and, like, you know, looking at the fragments. They'll be able to get an idea pretty quickly of what happened.
Well, the first thing that's going to happen is, I mean, they've already basically said the leading theory is a bomb.
Yeah.
You know, which, you know, in many of these things, you might not even have that much solidity on something only a few days after it happened. But I would not be shocked if within a week we've got suspects.
Yeah, I wouldn't be shocked either.
I mean, I'm not predicting that, but I would not be surprised at all.
Yeah, I wouldn't be shocked either.
Okay. Anything else to say about that?
Nope.
If not, let's take a break and let's do a little bit of a lightning round. Back after this.
Information.
Okay, we are back. We did not do a lightning round last week, so let's do one now. Yvonne, you go. You had a couple things.
Bitcoin.
Yes, Bitcoin.
It all of a sudden it started surging again. It surged like 50%. Sam was getting rich as we spoke.
I am very excited by my 0.05 bitcoins that I bought, which I believe was $50 at the time I bought it.
And they are worth now?
It's going for about $430 right now. So that would be about $21.
Yay!
So my $50 investment is now worth a little bit more than $21. So, but hey, it was down to like 10 or something.
Yes. And so apparently one of the big things that caused the surge this week is that the European Union decided to define Bitcoin as a currency and not a commodity, which removed taxation of it, as instead of being taxed as a property, that it's actually currency. So it didn't get taxed. And, made it that it surged. It traded as high as 492 on Wednesday. A 50% surge from last Friday's closing price. Okay. It did fall to around the number that you were talking about right now. But yeah, I mean, you know, it's like, I don't know. Bitcoin, baby. Bitcoin. We're going to get rich.
Now, I presume, as we talked about a couple years ago, you've just been throwing your whole 401k into Bitcoin, right?
Oh, yeah. Everything.
Everything.
Everything. Oh, yeah,
you've insisted that your employer pay you in Bitcoin.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
There you go.
Yep.
Okay, moving on. I'm still waiting. I expected that by now, it's been like almost 2 years since I bought my Bitcoin, I think. Was it 2 years? I don't know. Whatever.
Something.
It should be worth millions of dollars now. I'm disappointed.
Oh, well.
I fully expected that $50 I put into it would be worth at least $50 million 2 years out. I mean, come on. That's reasonable, isn't it?
Yes. Sure.
Okay. My turn. I watched another movie.
Oh, yeah?
And I'm a little slow. Like, it's been a couple weeks since I saw this because we've been doing other things on the show. But in my continuing effort to watch all Star Wars video media in the order they came out, I watched Caravan of Courage, an Ewok Adventure, which came out in 1984. To read the Wikipedia summary of it, the film focuses on the struggles of a brother and sister stranded on the forest moon of Endor in locating their parents, who have been kidnapped by a monster known as the Gorax. The film is set sometime between Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi.
Okay.
So, let me tell you, this is better than the Star Wars Holiday Special.
But?
Well, that's kind of about as much as I could say, because it really sucks.
Okay.
I mean, yes, it is better than the Star Wars Holiday Special, but yeah, it's really bad. What can you say? I watched it on YouTube. It wasn't available any other way, but it was available on YouTube. And it's just, it's somewhat painful to watch. There's this one part where this like giant rat-like creature is chasing them through the forest. My son Alex came in while I was watching that part, and he's like, "Hippo attack! Hippo attack! Hippo attack!" It's this horrible stop-motion rat-looking thing that apparently my son thought looked like a hippo. But it's just bad special effects, bad acting, a really lame story, very slow. The thing is like a little, it's 96 minutes long. The entire actual plot could easily fit into 15 minutes, but it's stretched out. I don't know why anybody was expecting when the Star Wars prequels came out that they would be any good, because absolutely everything, well, I haven't watched everything yet, but from what I have seen so far, of everything other than the initial three Star Wars movies that George Lucas put out in the Star Wars universe.
Yeah.
These are crap. These are all crap. So everybody was disappointed by the prequels, but like, you know, if you look at everything that Lucas was putting out after Return of the Jedi, most of it was crap. So you should have expected it. And I know everybody, including me, is excited about the new Star Wars coming out. The trailer looks nice, etc. And George Lucas is no longer involved, so hopefully it'll be good.
Okay.
Anyway, your turn again. Go.
Oh, gosh. What did I have over here?
Fred Thompson.
Fred Thompson died. He was a presidential candidate.
He was
for the Republicans.
He was a presidential candidate in 2008.
Yeah, it wasn't that long ago.
Which means, as a couple of people have pointed out, that if he had won and won re-election,
yeah,
we would have had a president die in office.
That's right.
So it's just a reminder of the fact that, you know, yes, you know, the vice presidential pick does matter. If someone picks Sarah Palin, they deserve to get pummeled. You know, especially if you're thinking about electing a person who's up there in years, and some of our candidates are, including Hillary. I mean, she's not like ancient or anything, but, you know, she's getting up there. You do have to take seriously the possibility that they won't make it through 8 years. And so, yeah, you pay attention to the vice president. Also, though, I mean, he was a senator. He was on Law and Order for many years.
Yes,
like
he was.
DA there.
Yep.
He actually did that. Like, he was the DA, and then he became senator, and then he went back to Law and Order, didn't he?
No, he didn't go back. No.
No, he didn't? Oh, okay. I thought he did. Maybe I was thinking. No. Arnold went back and did another Terminator movie.
Yeah, he did. But he went back. He didn't go back to, like, I hadn't seen him do anything on TV or anything after.
After he was a senator?
After he was senator, yeah. No.
Okay, I thought he did for some reason. Oh, well. Do-do-do. This is Sam from the future here, interrupting just to say I was right about Fred Thompson's acting career. Well, sort of. He was in the Senate from 1994 to 2003, and he was acting from 1985 straight through to 2015, a few months before his death. And he was in all kinds of movies, TV shows, all kinds of things. And in fact, one thing that's interesting is the Law and Order timeline we were talking about, completely wrong. He was not on Law and Order before he was a senator. He started on Law and Order for the very first time while he was still a senator. He started in 2002, in the last few months of his Senate career, is when he started filming Law and Order for the first time. And then he continued to play that character on Law and Order straight through to 2006 in the various Law and Order spinoffs and such. And there are actually a few other things that he did movie and TV wise actually while he was a senator, which is just okay. He was doing both. He was a senator and he was an actor. In any case, he has acted before, during, and after his Senate career, and he kept acting right up through the end. He was in a TV show called Allegiance in 2015 in four episodes, and he was in three different movies in 2015, Unlimited, A Larger Life, and 90 Minutes in Heaven. So there you go. Okay, back to the show. Do-do-do! Everybody seems to say he was a nice guy.
Yeah. He passed away. Anyway.
Okay, next up from me, and this is also a couple weeks old in terms of news at this point, but it's just worth pointing out, Mythbusters is going to have their last season. They got canceled.
Yep.
And, you know, I was never a religious watcher. Like, I was never one that, like, made sure I watched every episode of that show.
I watched a couple, but, you know, after a while, it gets repetitive.
I admit that. It's the kind of thing that back in the days when I would flip channels, if I flipped channels and saw it on, I would watch. But I wouldn't really seek it out to watch. That's part of their problem. One is that they've done just about everything they can do for the moment, and maybe they need a rest. Second is, it's much harder for a show like that to live in the era where when people do watch shows, you know, they're binge watching a whole season at a time and looking it up on Netflix and or DVRing it even, as opposed to just, hey, what's on right now? Oh, Mythbusters, that looks cool. Because it's a different level of commitment to be flipping channels and stop on something and watch it versus saying, this is going to be one of the shows I make sure to watch every week.
Right.
Or that I'm going to buy a whole season of or whatever.
Right.
But, you know, it was an important geek show. So that's all I have to say about Myth, but they still have one more season to come. So they're not done yet, and they know they're being canceled. So they're going out with all kinds of reviews of what they've done in the past and retrospectives and things like that. So anyway, you have anything on your list, or should I do one or two more from
mine? No, I'm done with my list. It's out.
Okay. YouTube Red. YouTube is launching a paid version of their service.
I don't know why they named it that. Can I be honest?
Okay.
There is the porn site called RedTube, and so you decided to name YouTube Red?
Yes, they did.
I don't know. I didn't think that was thought very thoroughly.
Yeah, well, anyway. The main idea, of course, is it's a paid version of YouTube that will remove the commercials and also have certain exclusive content that is only available on YouTube Red. I forget, what does it cost? $5 a month or something?
I don't know. I don't remember. But I think the whole point that everybody was saying is that, you know, look, I mean, it's you. Everybody's so used to YouTube being free.
Yes.
Right. It's been free like forever that, it's like all of a sudden now pay for content on YouTube that unless you really launch something completely different, that it's just kind of like difficult. I think that they're going to find it difficult to get people to sign up.
I think they are going to have trouble there. The two arguments I can see And I don't know how this will play out. But one, I'm getting very used to, in my media content, not having commercials. And the YouTube commercials do annoy me. Like, and my son, right now, in his television watching, almost, I'd say 95% plus of his watching is on YouTube. He has certain channels on YouTube he follows, mainly like people who do Minecraft videos, Stampy Cat, Diamond Minecart, folks like that. Stampy Longnose is his official name, but he's anyway, whatever. And most of his watching is that way. And I get pissed off by the commercials. They're disruptive. They're in the way. I could see the possibility of just paying to get rid of the commercials if the price was low enough. Like, I might pay a couple bucks a month. I doubt I'd pay 10 or 15 bucks a month. But I might pay a couple bucks a month to get rid of the commercials because it's such a large percentage of the viewing in my household right now. And the commercials are annoying. The other thing is, if they do produce any content that is only behind their paywall that is really wanted, I could see considering that for that. Like, so far they haven't, but like I mentioned, my kid follows religiously several of these YouTubers doing Minecraft videos. If they started putting out special content that was only available behind that paywall that he really wanted to see, I'd consider it.
I hear you. Okay. All right.
Just slight. Okay. Okay, well, let's just cut it there then. I've always got more stuff. One more thing. Twitter trying to play with themselves again. And we've talked.
Twitter trying to play with themselves again. So first we start with YouTube Red, and now you're talking about Twitter trying to play with themselves again. Okay, all right.
Yes.
Okay. Sell me on this. What's you know?
Well,
okay.
You know, we've talked in the last couple of weeks how they've been sort of flailing around trying to figure out how to become profitable, how to actually monetize, and blah blah blah. And the latest thing they've done, you know about this, right?
I don't remember the big controversy
over the last couple of days.
No, I guess I've been like in a meetings all day long.
So Twitter announced this week. And made the change live on their site at the same time and in all their apps a few hours later.
Yeah.
That they were, right, in the old Twitter, you would favorite things. And there was a star icon that you would click on to favorite something.
Okay, that's gone?
That's gone. And instead, now you like things and it's a heart.
What? What the hell?
Exactly.
When did they change that?
Tuesday or Wednesday this week, I forget.
What the? I mean, but I used Twitter like this morning and it wasn't like that. Wait.
You may just not have had the latest update of the app pushed to your phone.
Oh, look, there it is. There's a fucking heart.
There you go.
What the hell is this bullshit?
Exactly. And so the overwhelming reaction amongst people who are actually active Twitters, right?
Twitter, what are they on crack?
So, you know, people have made
all... imagine you going into freaking, like, Facebook and all of a sudden they got rid of the like button?
Yes. So, you could... A lot of people have made fun of this on Twitter, of course, of, you know, imagining the Twitter board meeting saying, we're losing in the social media race. Facebook is kicking our ass. We don't know what to do. Oh, I have an idea. Change the star into a heart. That's it. That's it. That'll solve all our problems.
I'm sure that something close to that apparently happened. You know.
So anyway, a lot of people are up in arms about this for a lot of the same reasons people don't like liking on Facebook. First of all, they're complaining like there's a reason I'm on Twitter and not on Facebook. They're different.
Right.
And I use them for different things. But one of the problems with likes on Facebook is you always get people, you know, well, what happens when, you know, somebody posts that their mom died?
I know.
You're not going to
like it. Oh, let me like it.
Right. And so they're talking about, you know, people use this favorite button in a whole variety of different ways. Like, it wasn't just, you know, it's acknowledgement. Okay, this is interesting. But also people used it to bookmark things to come back to, essentially like, oh, I want to look at this later. And all kinds of other things were now, and favorite is, I mean, favorite was kind of a loaded term. You really like it, but people used it in a whole bunch of different ways. They were sort of used to it. It's just a star. It doesn't mean anything, but
right,
now
it's a star. I mean, it's like, you know, you put a, I mean, you could use a star in a bazillion different ways. Right. That's right. Now it's like, I put a little heart on the thing.
And you're saying you like it. So somebody, somebody posts the news event about the plane crash in the Sinai.
And I like it.
And you like it.
Yeah.
And so people are all upset about this. But I've seen a couple of things that also look at this again that say hardcore Twitter power users think this is awful, horrible. They don't like change. They don't like it. But if you just look more broadly at like Twitter users who aren't those hardcore types, they're like, oh, a heart. That's cool. And, you know, this is all part of Twitter's overall effort, you know, and they've been criticized for ignoring their power users. But what they're trying to do is become more accessible to,
right,
quote-unquote,
which at the same time
users.
Is going to basically dilute what the fuck it's for, which is what we talked about a couple of times when we talked about Twitter. They're going to, you know, in order to try to make fucking money on this thing, they're going to fucking break it.
Right. And so, yeah, maybe you do get like your random user who logs into Twitter, who's only ever logged in once or twice or logs in once a week or something, is going to be like, ooh, cool, a heart. But if you lose the people who are on Twitter multiple times a day, every day, using it aggressively, you lose the engine that powers the whole thing.
Right.
Anyway, we'll see. I think it's stupid, but like, I mean, the bottom line is the functionality is exactly the same. They've changed.
Oh, and I'm just seeing on the news right now. Okay, all right. Tony Fadell, who worked with Steve Jobs to create the iPod, he's saying there that Steve Jobs considered building an Apple car back in 2008.
Yeah, I saw.
Yeah.
That.
I just see that on the screen right now.
Yeah, anyway. I mean, the functionality on the stupid button is exactly the same, but it hits people differently because of how you named it. Like, there's no actual reason you have to act differently, but people will act differently. And Twitter's gambling on the fact that the new way will be better for them in some way than the old way, but I think it's just fiddling with completely the wrong things. But
all right.
And as we've said before, like their race to try to make Twitter like another Facebook is
it's
doomed to fail. They need to figure out another way. So yeah. Where Twitter can be Twitter. Anyway, thanks everybody. That's enough for today. Yet another Curmudgeon's Corner is
in the books.
In the books, in the can, flushed down the toilet. I don't know. What's the right thing to say?
Done.
Thank you all for listening. We appreciate you. Go to Facebook, like us, share us. It was pointed out to us this week. We were bitching about having people go and do reviews on iTunes for us.
We got one.
We now have two reviews on iTunes.
Yes.
And it's actually been there since April, and we just hadn't noticed because we don't actually check that often.
I thought I had, but oh well. Anyway.
Anyway, thank you, Jen, for the review. And anybody else out there, please, we encourage you to review our shoe on. Shoe? Review our shoe.
Shoe on? Our shoe on?
Yeah.
Review our shoe on? Okay. All right.
Review our show on iTunes. Like us on Facebook. Share us on Facebook. All the crap. And have a good week, everybody. We'll see you next time. Goodbye.
Thanks. Bye-bye.